I'd like to start just by acknowledging my esteemed colleague, Daniel Esparza, who's here, and I may defer some questions to him later as well as Lua Bacheva and Eduardo Vega, who is not with us here at APHA. I have no relationship to disclose. We'll just skip this here. So today, I wanted to talk about just a brief intro to why we're studying stigma. So we're going to be talking about a California state project that works on prevention and early intervention and stigma reduction in particular. And just an intro to stigma and its barriers to care and mental health. This is a Surgeon General's report on mental health. Stigmatization reduces patients' access to resources and opportunities, like housing and jobs, and also leads to low self-esteem, isolation, hopelessness, outright discrimination, and abuse. More tragically, it deprives people of their dignity and interferes with their full participation in society. And so our project in particular actually focuses on stigma in culturally diverse communities, particularly racial and ethnic groups in California. And I wanted to read a quote here from a family member. It's actually a sister of a Chinese immigrant with schizophrenia. And just to highlight that actually stigma often affects culturally diverse communities even more. So underserved populations are often suffering from the stigma of mental illness in even stronger ways. And so this woman says, Chinese people say, if she's crazy and not yet married, and if you tell others that she is sick, no one will marry her. This is a person who has no future. It's as if she had died. And so that's really how, you know, illustrates, I think, how tragically stigma can affect some of the communities that we're talking about today. Oops. Give a brief intro to our program, which is called the Promising Practices Program. We're housed within the Mental Health Stigma and Discrimination Reduction area of a California-based project. We work with multiple collaborators, which you can see across the bottom here, but we're with the Mental Health Association of San Francisco. In particular, Promising Practices, kind of the model is that we want to use community-based participatory research to find out what is working in culturally diverse communities instead of kind of taking what we're calling evidence-based practices and then planting them in diverse communities. And so we're hoping to find some promising practices across the state, see what their best practices are, and then make them evidence-based practices. So we work with a variety of community partners. There are community-based organizations, grassroots organizations. Some groups are ethnic, cultural, racial community practice groups, such as like a drumming group for a Native American group, countywide programs, and also some other kind of a variety of identified programs that have been identified by county liaisons. So the methods of the overall project, I'll just kind of give an overview since it gives a better picture, are really, it's again, CBPR, community-based participatory research. And we try to identify culturally relevant programs that are already existing in some form that might reduce stigma using local community advocates. And so this, we have five local project coordinators across the state, and they are experts in their community, and they have some cultural expertise as well, and so they're looking kind of grassroots level what's happening and giving us the feedback. And we interview the programs, so staff, mental health consumers, family members, important community members, for mutual interest, and then we try to see if there's any kind of stigma reduction happening in their program. And what we'll really be focusing on today is just the needs assessment and how we provided the findings of the needs assessment, how we provided a tailored plan to work with some of these communities in really different ways. We do an evaluation, which we won't be talking about today. That's not completely done yet. And also the tools that we provide for program support. So the needs assessment piece, I think a lot of the time in community-based practice, we kind of walk in with research and just like, well, tell me what you need, and then kind of write it down and leave. And so it's a little bit, can feel a little bit like you're on the couch there. So we try to do it a little more collaboratively. And using a, so we had kind of informal focus groups with community leaders, a variety of like local county liaisons, ethnic, what are they called, ethnic service managers that are also county-based, and to find how can we form a needs assessment about mental health stigma that is actually makes sense to diverse communities. And really one of the interesting pieces of feedback that we got was take out the word mental health or mental illness. Just take it out. So we used words like wellness and social inclusion. So this is our needs assessment, so very open-ended. They said, you know, don't have any scales in there, nothing too structured. Leave it open-ended and let people give you completely open-ended feedback. And so this has ended up to be the actual needs assessment. If you have any further questions about this, we can talk about that more later. And the photo in the corner is one of our community groups that we worked with that I'll talk about later. So the kind of participants in our project, then, we have the 5 local project coordinators I described. 12 needs assessments were completed across the state, across 7, or actually only 6 California counties. And so really we tried to get as diverse a group as possible. And so we had African American, which included some youth-focused ones. They had an African immigrant community group, and then an African heritage group, which is African Americans born in the U.S. targeting. Also, the Asian American group, which often gets lumped together. So you'll see that we tried really hard to separate things out as much as possible. And instead of clumping together the Asian American groups, we went to a Cambodian targeted group, a Chinese group, Hmong, Lao, Vietnamese, and then the Latino, we actually had a Mayan group in San Francisco, a Mayan indigenous group, and there was another catch-all Latino program that we worked with, as well as one Native American program. So the overall findings, we used a very loosely based kind of qualitative review, since there were only 12 needs assessments. And these categories is kind of are just pretty much what we came up with that came up time and time again. They're actually not in the order of the most common, so I'll tell you the most common ones. The number one, not surprisingly, was financial assistance. So they said, you know, if we're going to really do any kind of stigma reduction or get people into our program, we need more services. We need more money, more services. So hands down, every single group rated that their kind of number one need. They also wanted networking with similar agencies and kind of, as well as just really that was visibility in some way. So hearing about other agencies, so a lot of these groups were so small, like the Hmong group that we were working with in Central California doesn't have a website, so how are people going to find them? Doesn't have good access to other Hmong groups, which there were other small, very grassroots Hmong groups that we had come across, but really no way to connect with each other. So really they wanted to network with similar agencies and get better visibility in the community. And then the other big one was actually program evaluation. So, the program evaluation piece was a little bit surprising to us because we were hoping to do it anyway. But they were saying that, you know, we need funding, and in order to get funding, we have to show that our program works. And so, in order to do that, like, we actually worked very closely with many different groups to develop a small program evaluation that's really tailored to what they're doing and how it might change mental health practices, incorporate wellness, and reduce stigma using kind of wellness-focused words and activities. So I'm going to do a case study kind of approach here. So I'm only going to really talk about 2 today, given our time. So the first one we'll talk about is Beats, Rhymes, and Life. They're based out of Oakland, California. Their target is urban youth, primarily African American and Latino youth, just given their location. And their, quote, stated goal was to provide culturally responsive options for therapy using a community-defined strategy. So they do actually use, this group actually uses the word therapy. It's co-led by a social worker and a peer, a graduated student from the program. So they do really cool work. and they're a little bit more further along in the development of their program than some of the other groups we had. And so what they wanted was funding, and then working with, you know, their number one target was funding, and kind of scaling up as well. And so they said, how do we scale up? How do we get funding? How do we market ourselves not as just a hip-hop therapy group, but kind of become more open to grow, open to drawing in students who maybe don't, even if they like the idea of hip-hop and making records, they still don't like the idea of therapy. So we said, okay, let's come up. We ended up deciding a logic model was what they wanted to do. And so we supported building a logic model in order to use for all their future funding projects. They also wanted program evaluation, again, for funding reasons. So we adapted a common stigma measure called the attribution questionnaire and allowed them to use that, as well as identifying useful variables for evaluation that exist. So for instance, using GPA, truancy, the kind of delinquency rates, as well as number of times like getting into trouble at school for their participants in their program. And they also wanted visibility. So we developed a webinar, and this is one thing we've done with many of the other programs as well, given that one of the main targets was they want visibility, so that people in the community know who they are. They want to become more a part of the community rather than a separate health service center or a separate wellness center. And so the webinar was created collaboratively between our program and the executive director of Beach Vines and Life. We recorded it. It's actually still available on our website if you'd like to see it. And it does the thing where we're providing legitimacy to the organization. Thank you. Because now they have somewhere to direct people. They have somewhere to direct people who ask about the program. They're like, okay, let us tell you what we're doing. Let us tell you about our model, how it works. And Tomas did it. You know, the executive director there did a great job. He kind of put in some of the clips of the music, interviewed some of the students, and so it became a real way for them to show what they do to funders, to people who might be interested in growing the program. It also just kind of helps disseminate their community-defined practice to anybody else who wants to use that model in some way. The kind of drawbacks from the research side, of course, since this is also in part of a research project, is that it's very hard to generalize, as you can imagine, findings from this kind of CBPR. It all becomes very qualitative, and so even as we're reporting it, it's case by case. All of our programs are so different, and all of our findings are pretty broad. And one of our other programs here, so this is the Hmong Health Education Program, and they are called the Traditional Healers Project. They are part of the Hmong Outreach Program in Olivehurst, which is somewhere in Central California. And so they target, there's a pretty large Hmong community there, and they are all relatively recent immigrants, so not very highly acculturated. And the target is actually the Hmong community and clinicians, so educating clinicians about Hmong spiritual practices and kind of their ways of, their views of mental illness or really wellness or not wellness, like mental illness is not as much important of a concept. And so they want to provide culturally responsive education about mental health, wellness, and again, using the community-defined strategy. So you can see how this might be reducing stigma, as it is already. They're reducing stigma in their own community by educating people about mental health, the Hmong community, and then really stigma of kind of the shamanistic practices common to the Hmong community by telling clinicians why it is, what it is, and how it's perceived to enhance wellness. So this was one of the things that we worked on. They wanted as well to have a program evaluation largely for funding purposes, for future funding purposes. And so we worked together to come up with this. It's both in Hmong and English, as you can see. And it's just, they have some groups and activities, and they wanted to show that, you know, people keep coming back. So that's usually a pretty good sign that something is going right. But it's not not quite enough to get funding. So, thank you. So we had this simple evaluation that they're currently using, and we'll be there to support them in any kind of evaluation when they need it. And so these are some of the other tools we've worked with these groups and the other groups as well. So some of the groups had wanted just more basic stigma education, kind of getting the word out. What is stigma? How does it prevent people from seeking help? And what can we do about it? And so we have, you know, stigma has been a pretty big mental health issue for a while. There's a lot of publicity about how to reduce stigma. And so there's not as many in different languages. So one of the things we supported was translating a lot of these materials. So translation of the what is stigma, we had a what is stigma kind of flyer for people to hand out. Also some stigma evaluations that have culturally adaptable pieces, and we work individually with each group to create those. Of course, as I mentioned, program evaluation. We also have an annual conference called the Tools for Change Conference, and that's a place where people are presenting their work and talking about their community practices and also networking, right? They're meeting these other agencies that are all over the state that often maybe don't have the website or don't have really ways to know who else is out there. As I mentioned, we have the webinars, as well as the center registry, which is just a list of all these culturally diverse groups that are doing some kind of community-based work to reduce stigma in their communities. So the main findings are just that programs, you know, really wanted research feedback. They wanted program evaluations, basically to get more funding, not surprisingly. And that culturally, really importantly, I think the second point is the most important one. Culturally diverse communities often engage in culturally relevant, protective, and supportive practices, somehow, you know, addressing mental illness or wellness. And it doesn't necessarily use the words mental illness. And so the stigma, we're kind of bypassing stigma in a different way. And then stigma reduction strategies from community developmental health programs might be not specific to stigma, so that in stigma work in the future, keeping our eyes open for those kind of diverse ways of reducing stigma. And we'll skip this one as we're at the end. And you can look at our website for more information, or if we're on to questions now. Great. Thank you. Thank you.